Hi, Paul. It's Marilyn. I was just asking.
Hello.
I was just asking if we were going to have Verhoef or Jeffrey on the phone.
David Maher.
Welcome, David. We have Marilyn, Paul Stahura, and Barbara Safra on the call.
Nicholas Lagergren.
Hi, Nicholas.
Hi, Glenn.
We have Marilyn, Paul Stahura, David Maher, and Barbara on the call.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hello, it's Jeff Newman.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Glenn.
We have Marilyn, Paul Stahura, David Maher, Nicholas Lagergren, and Barbara on the call.
Okay, I'm trying to write that down. You said myself, Marilyn, Paul Stahura, David.
Nicholas Lagergren from IP.
Okay.
And Barbara.
You said David Maher, right?
Yes.
Or is it? Okay, I didn't know if it was Ferris or... Yeah, David Ferris just sent me a note saying he's going to be late.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we'll wait a few more minutes. I know Jordan's not going to be able to get on.
I think we've got a point of view from him.
Yep.
So, Jeff, while we're waiting... Did I miss an announcement, or are we still waiting?
We're still waiting. It's still a few more weeks. The reason I stayed home is my wife is on bed rest.
Oh, right.
We have until January about the 20th.
Oh.
My sister is due that same week.
We'll see what happens. We'll see if it comes earlier. Everyone have a good time in Cape Town that was there?
We missed you.
We did. Lovely host.
Hello, this is Tom Keller, just joined.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, I heard about our little boat cruise.
This is Milton.
Hi, Milton.
Hello.
Okay.
Jeff, sorry, it's Glenn. We have apologies from Mark Schneiders.
Right. Okay, do you want to, Glenn, just call out the names again and see which constituencies we are missing?
Fine. Marilyn from the business constituency, Paul Stahura from the registrar constituency, plus Tom Keller from the registrar constituency, David Maher from the GTOD registries, Nicholas Lagergren from the IP, yourself from the registries, Milton from the non-commercials, and we are missing ISPs and ALAC.
You're not missing ALAC anymore, Thomas.
Thank you, Thomas. Hello.
Okay, and so someone else is joined?
Maggie Van Scorpia.
That's Maggie from the ISPs, okay.
So we've got all the constituencies present.
Okay, I thought I might have heard a second beep in there. Anybody else that we missed?
Yeah, Wendy Seltzer just joining from ALAC.
Oh, hey, hey, Wendy.
Hi, Wendy.
Long time.
Yes.
Okay.
Getting to the end of the busy season.
Well, at least for you, hopefully. Maybe it's really busy for some of, really busy for a lot of us too. Yeah,
short call then.
Yeah. Well, okay, that's next thing is I wanted to kind of go over the agenda of what we want to do today. Initially, we were going to spend most of the time talking about next steps for tiered access. In the meantime, we've gotten an email on the the second issue, which is the conflicts with national law. So I'm assuming by now everybody has seen a copy of that on the list. It was sent from Paul Verhoef to Jordan and myself, and then we forwarded it on to the group. I guess Paul couldn't post directly to the list. So first question is to Barbara. Do we know if Paul or anyone else from the ICANN is coming on?
Both Paul and John Jeffrey had conflicts at this time, and in fact, Dan Halloran did as well. It's just unfortunate that the timing of this worked out this way, but they actually already had calls scheduled at this time.
Okay, that's fine. I think what we'll do then is we'll discuss the note internally in this group, and then also I know there are some people anyway that couldn't make this call today that certainly want to be a part of it. So I think one of the things that'll come out of this is to have our next meeting and formally invite the ICANN staff, including Paul, John Jeffrey, or Dan, and anybody else that wants to get on that call, so that we can thoroughly vet some of the issues. To sum up the note, and I'm going to it now, basically where we left it last time was that we wanted feedback from ICANN before we finalized our report on the conflicts with national law, so that we could develop a preliminary report that could go out for, even before the preliminary report, so we can issue a formal call for constituency statements. And then that would help us to compile the preliminary report after we got all those constituency statements in. The reason, again, we wanted ICANN to give us their feedback before that is because constituency statements, we figured, may change depending on what ICANN has come back and said. And I think with the note that we got from ICANN, I think that's right. I think constituencies are definitely going to have some comments. So what I want to do first is to discuss that note and to discuss next steps that the task force wants to take, if any, based on the note that ICANN sent us. Even though ICANN has come back with a recommendation, that does not necessarily mean that the task force can't go forward on this issue if it chooses to, but obviously this may affect how we decide to go forward. That being said, in pulling up the note, Paul Verhoef has discussed this issue with John Jeffrey and some others on the ICANN staff, and has basically come out and said, has basically come out and said, made a 6 points. The first point was that, we have this policy on the fact that there may be some conflict between the ICANN registry and registrar agreements and national law. And the response from ICANN is that, if there is any kind of conflict, if there's any portion of the applicable agreement that conflicts with national law, or makes it illegal for them to perform, then they shouldn't enter into that agreement.
May I be the first, it's Paul Stahura, to comment on this first point?
Sure. Do you guys want to go point by point, or do you want me to go through all the points raised, and then we can just open it up?
I think you should go through all the points and then open it up.
Okay. So, Paul, I have you on the list. Someone who wants to speak, let me go.
I'm sure we can all read them.
Okay.
Jeff.
Yes, Marilyn.
Can we just make sure that we allocate time before we end the call? We do have another work item that we need to issue an interim report on. So while I really want to focus on this, I want to be sure before everyone drops off, we focus on how we're going to get that interim report out as well.
Yes, that was going to be the second topic of once we decide the next steps forward with this, we need to decide next steps on the first report. And then also next steps on the tiered access issue.
Jeff, could I just make a quick comment? I agree with Paul Stahura that we probably have all read this, and it may not be necessary for you to summarize it.
Okay, I'm fine with doing that as well. So let me then open up the floor to get some general... I'd like to try to go in order of points, just to open it up with that first point. So I know Paul wanted to say something. Anybody else want to be in the queue on that?
I would like to.
You're talking about just point one?
Let's see if we can go point by point. Okay, so I got Paul, I got Milton, and Tom Keller. So why don't we start with Paul, and obviously people can join the queue at any time.
Okay, I think on point one, it's pretty obvious that, of course, that's correct. But, I mean, the statement as it's written, but the whole issue is after the registrars or registries enter into an agreement, if either the agreement changes because of a consensus policy that then conflicts with their national law, or if the national law changes, that then it conflicts with the agreement. So the question to me isn't whether, you know, registrars and registries, of course they should not enter into contracts that conflict, or, you know, that makes it illegal for them to perform, but the question is what happens after they enter into the agreement and one or the other side changes? Then what happens? That's where I don't think whoever wrote this, I guess Paul does not get it, and just from that first statement. That's what we're trying to figure out.
I think that's a very good point. And again, I'm taking notes on this, and Glenn is taking notes as well. And what I'll do is, after this call, what we'll do is we'll summarize a list of the questions that come out of this.
Jeff, this is Steve Metalis. Just wanted to let you know I joined the call.
Sure. Hi, Steve. We're just talking about the note we got from ICANN.
Right.
And so I have next Milton and then Tom Keller.
Yeah, quickly, really it's kind of a global comment, but it does relate to point one, which is fundamental. It seems to me that that Paul is saying that he wants to be the policymaker here, and he has decided that there is going to be no flexibility in terms of the application of the contracts. And the whole point of our procedure was to create that flexibility. And I don't think that it is a job of the staff to dictate that there will be no exceptions if indeed the bottom-up process of ICANN decides that there should be. And this point applies to point two and as well, in which, you know, the idea that the uniformity and the competition value overrides everything else is, again, a policy decision that we're supposed to be making, not Paul. So I think that this is a very, very seriously disturbing message that we're getting here. And there are other points as we get further down that I will show where he literally does not understand the procedure that's being proposed.
Okay. Tom?
Yes, thank you. I just want to reinforce what Paul just said. I guess what we're just trying to build is a system of, you know, a process what we can do in the case that the legislation is coming up and making something illegal which hasn't been illegal before, or which has been under discussion in the registrar. I couldn't be sure whether it is against it or not. So that's something we really need, because we're living in always changing times, and that's something we really should have. And it should not be to point out something in the policy-making process. So we can't make policy for everything. We can just kind of set general guidelines. And that is exactly what we tried to do there in creating the process.
Okay, and I want to kind of jump in with a comment as well. I agree with all those points raised. I think it's interesting to go back to Milton's point first, is that, you know, it's interesting that registries and registrars sign contracts to be bound by the bottoms-up process, and that it's almost as if ICANN is sending the message that although registries and registrars are bound by it, that ICANN is not. I'm not sure that's the message that they want to be sending or that they intend to be sending, but unfortunately that's one thing that comes out of the note. I think the second important thing to note is the message that they're sending is that if you live in a country where the national law does in fact conflict with an ICANN requirement, whatever that requirement is, whether it's who is or not, or it's any other subject, they're basically saying that you cannot be an ICANN-accredited registry or an ICANN-accredited registrar. Again, I don't think that's the message they want to be sending, but unfortunately, I think that's the message they are sending. And I think there are other ways to deal with this particular problem. I understand that they want to ensure that their contracts, you know, that they can enforce their contracts and not have loopholes given to registrars or registries. But, you know, for example, if let's say, you know, Germany's got pretty strict laws on privacy, you know, if there want, if any registry from Germany, if there ever wants to be a registry in Germany that does a GTLD, and I'm thinking about a process that's, you know, going on right now, I'm not sure that, I think that may exclude a potential candidate, if in fact, you know, that does conflict with German law. So I think there are a lot of repercussions above and beyond this particular WHO IS problem. Although, I don't think they want to be sending these messages, so at least on the call that we have with them, I would certainly like to ask if this is really what they intend and whether they realize that there's repercussions above and beyond these points on the paper. Does anybody else have comments on that?
This is Steve Metallis. Could I get in the queue?
Sure.
You may have... I apologize if you discussed this earlier, but I think it is important that we have a dialogue with Paul about this, Paul Verhoeven, and with John Jeffrey, I hope, although I guess this came just from Paul, because as someone has already stated, I think there's evidence from this note that they don't entirely understand what we're recommending, and I think you're correct that it raises some broader issues. I mean, I think that the whole question of whether a registrar who would be prevented by local law from complying with aspects of the registrar accreditation agreement should not be a registrar, I mean, I think I don't think there's a black and white answer to that question, and that's the reason why we've recommended this consultation process to try to avoid those situations if at all possible. And I'm not sure that really has been understood by the ICANN staff. So I would just suggest that we try to arrange some opportunity for dialogue with them about this, because I think they have some misunderstandings about what's in this recommendation.
This is Barbara. Can I just say that this was not prepared solely by Paul V, but this was done in consultation with other staff members, particularly with John Jeffrey and Dan Heller.
Well, I mean, yeah, whoever the staff...
Yeah, I'm just saying, I just don't want this to sound like it didn't come from some discussion. It actually, there was discussion about it. So it's not just Paul V's opinion, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Okay.
Did they carefully read the actual procedure?
Barbara, you don't have to.
I was going to say I'm not going to get into that because I wasn't actually a party to those discussions, and so it's like I'm going to let it stand as the document it is. But I just wanted to clarify that it wasn't solely Paul V's opinion. That's all. That's the only.
The other thing, I kind of wanted to ask a question of Tom Keller, coming from a country that's got strict privacy rules. I think we also, one of the things we need to understand is, and for Paul as well, as far as I understand it now, there are some registrars that currently do not comply with all of the ICANN requirements, some of them citing national law issues. What do you think the reaction is going to be from those registrars? And even .name, who's a registry that's not abiding 100%.
I think he telegraphed that in item number 6. Basically, he's saying we should make the policy so that it's very, like, lowest common denominator. So
but that would be zero.
What's that?
But that would be zero. That would be no public who is at all. And that's exactly what, you know, what we talked about for the last year.
But that's what he's saying in 6.
I think that's right. We haven't gotten to 6 yet, but I think that is right. It's almost the lowest common denominator. It is the lowest common denominator approach.
By the way, I'd be okay with that.
So, yeah, you're right. If they had completely abolished it, some would be okay, and some of this task force and the community would not be okay with that. So let's go on to, is there any other comments on number 1? Yeah, and again, I understand that most of these are more questions for the ICANN staff as well as comments as to the repercussions and really no answers on this call. But I'm just, again, trying to get a good understanding of what the issues are and then then we'll discuss the next steps.
Right. Jeff, it's Marilyn. I just wanted to make a general comment.
Sure.
Whenever we provide input to the ICANN staff, I gather that we need to be explicit about our requests, and I regret that, but we're going to have to actually ask the staff to have both thoroughly reviewed the record we've built and be briefed thoroughly before they come on the call with us. I'm disappointed to have to say that, but the practicality of what we experienced in Cape Town with the gap there is, you know, we're going to need to give a specific request to the preparation the ICANN staff does and issue the invitation to the broad set of ICANN staff.
Okay. And one of the other things I'm going to ask later is whether we want not just to open this up to the task force, but maybe to the council to listen in on as well, since it may affect the scope of the task force. Point number two is fair competition rules dictate that registered. All right, basically talks about loopholes.
Can I make a quick comment about that? This is Milton.
Yeah, it's actually two and three that talk about loopholes. Yes, Milton?
The one that bothers me here about point number two is the word purportedly outlawed. Now, the whole point of our procedure was to make sure that there really was a problem with the law. In other words, you can't just claim that there's a problem with the law and start violating the contract. You have to identify the law. You have to identify the local official. You have to enter in, give ICANN the opportunity to contact those people, which they, you know, can use whether they want or not as they choose. But it's, you know, again, it just raises questions about do they really understand what we're proposing.
Yeah, I think that's a good observation. I think that's one point we're going to have to clarify with them. Anybody else on point number two? And again, I think we can. What we could do is we could loop in point number three as well, which says that, you know, registrars, if you allow without careful study of the issues raised by our report, it could open loopholes which would hurt data accuracy, consumer protection, and other authorized uses of WHOIS data. So both 2 and 3 basically say that registrars may try to use this as a competitive advantage, and doing so they may look for loopholes, and in those loopholes it may hurt the legitimate users of WHOIS.
My comment for 2 is, he seems to be saying that, you know, there's a lot of issues surrounding it, and the competition one trumps other ones. It comes before other ones.
I guess the fun part is that our procedure still leaves it open to the council not only to extend that exemption only to that registrar or registry, but to all of them. That could be in the recommendation to the board as well. And at the end, the board is deciding whether they still want to work together with that registrar or registry or not. So it's not that we really don't give them any choice anymore.
So what you're saying basically is, again, the lowest common denominator, if they find that, for example, Italy has basically, it's against the law to collect, display, and disseminate personal information about domain name registrants or certain particular fields, let's say phone numbers, that according to the lowest common denominator approach, it could be that ICANN says, well, since they can't do it in Italy, then we might as well abolish it for every registrar.
Exactly. Because of the competition, it kind of forces them into the lowest common denominator method.
Right now, they're trying, and with number six, they're trying to force us into figuring out what the lowest common denominator is. And what we do is that we say, well, we don't know, but it might come up, and if there's an interested party who thinks that she's breaking some rules and laws, they should step up to ICANN, and then we can talk about whether that is worse to be defined as a common denominator or not. But it should be done by staff and not always through policy-making process.
Thomas here. Can I get him in the queue, please?
Sure.
Steve Metallage for the queue, please.
Okay. Thomas and Steve?
I have to say that I'm fascinated by fact two. points here. Point one is that quite unnecessarily the staff letter lectures us on legitimate uses of who is, which is basically an open question for policy making and not anything that is decided at this point. The second thing is why, where does the notion come from that competitive advantages gained by settling in a comfortable jurisdiction are unfair? How is it unfair competition to pick your jurisdiction? I find that a fascinating notion. Corporations all the time pick whatever jurisdiction fits their needs, and it is just a reality that we have to face. If a registrar picks a country where, say, courts are extremely slow and notoriously bad at enforcing consumer rights, then that may be a competitive advantage, and it is not ICANN's job to prevent that from happening. So I think to a certain extent, yes, local law is a part of whatever competitive edge a registrar has, and that's something to live with. So I'm a little fascinated by the apparent intent here that local law not be taken into account just to make sure that registrars don't get a competitive advantage.
Yeah, and to just add to that before I get to add to that before I get to Steve is, I mean, does ICANN really believe that registrars will move all of their operations to a jurisdiction that outlaws certain parts of who is? And remember, you know, even if one of the larger registrars wants to open up an office there, they're still subjected to laws in other countries. So let's say the largest one, say Network Solutions, you know, wants to keep who is private, so they go to a jurisdiction like Italy that may outlaw, or Japan that may outlaw who is, you know, Network Solutions is still subject to jurisdiction in other countries, and I would think would be hard pressed to argue that the exemption applies to them now that they've opened up an office there, even though they're also located around the world. So I'm kind of fascinated by that reaction as well. Steve?
Yeah, I think we're on to number three, and I just wanted to say that I think, like other parts of this statement, I think there are some issues worth discussing here, and I would basically agree with point three, but it's prefaced with the phrase without careful study, and the implication obviously is we haven't really thought about this. I think part of what we may be reacting to is the condescending tone of this whole statement, and regardless of who is the author of the statement, I think seems to be, whether inadvertently or not, it basically suggests that we really haven't thought about these issues and someone else needs to tell us to consider them. But I think the point is well taken that we have to be careful because there is the possibility that if we don't do this right, that we could, there could be competitive issues, there could be issues regarding the interests of who is consumers, and some of the other points here are, you know, they're not totally fallacious. It's just the implication that we haven't really thought about these things, and therefore back to the drawing.
So do we, to respond to that, do we put the burden on, I mean, in order to, I'm trying to think of how we write this up, is the burden on ICANN, you know, we've discussed this internally, we're going to submit it for public comment.
I think it kind of gets back to Marilyn's point about this doesn't reflect a much understanding of the record of what we have done here, and that doesn't mean that our work product is perfect and can't be improved, because I think it certainly could be, but I just think there's this tone here that we haven't thought about these. And as I said, I would agree if you read point three literally. I have no problem with that or with some of the other points that are made. But I think the idea, the suggestion that we haven't really thought about these things is kind of great.
Yeah. Jeff, I think it's Marilyn. What I think is worthwhile our kind of dialogue about is what I see
reflected in the email is just this considerable gap of understanding between us as the task force and the ICANN staff. And there may still be a gap in understanding after an informed dialogue, but I'm kind of where I think Steve is. I want to get to the informed participatory dialogue rather than having, you know, more emails that broaden the gap of understanding. We may still totally disagree with the staff, or we may not, or we may be so much better informed that we would revise our thinking considerably.
Mm-hmm. I kind of agree with Maryland. I think it seems like we should just check to make sure that they do understand it, because who knows, they might actually understand it and come up with this lowest common denominator solution.
That could very well be. Let's get through the other points, then talk about some next steps. I think I'd like to, before, as Marilyn said before, is to kind of educate or at least respond to these in an email or in a memo to them, so that they can be prepared to discuss that on the call that we have with them.
I think that one thing that Barbara reported earlier on may warrant comment from Council to policy support staff. Barbara mentioned that she was not part of the discussions that led to this letter. What is the point of staff support on a task force if not, among others, of course, bridging precisely the gap of understanding Marilyn and others have been talking about? I think that this point actually may point to a management issue inside ICANN. I think it would be appropriate for Council to pick this up and check back with ICANN management what's going on there.
This is Barbara. Can I just say something? It's a more general thing. It's not responding in particular to that. It's that many of you were not at Cape Town, and Paul Verhoef did sit in on the task force in Cape Town and actually raised some of these issues with the task force at that time. And so it's not as if no discussion took place between the task force and Paul Verhoef. Some discussion did, in fact, take place. Not all of you were party to that. That's part of the problem. And
Barbara, I would respectfully disagree that any discussion took place between us and Paul Verhoef. I was there,
yeah.
And Paul, I think we probably, this is not a productive rat hole for us to go down, because we, as both a counselor and a task force member, are going to have a very different opinion, and I think it'd be better if we just stayed focused on the points and then our request for a formal consultation.
Right. Okay. Any other comments on 3 before we get to 4? Okay. 4 basically says that our report allows registrars or registries to unilaterally breach the accreditation agreement because it believes, I guess, that there is a problem with national law. And so, therefore, ICANN would be unable to take any action to force compliance without formal action by the board. And they're also kind of say that they would not necessarily want to publish everything in a report because some of it may be privileged and confidential from legal advice from their ICANN attorneys. This could relate to not a complete understanding of what we had discussed, or maybe it is a drafting problem on our part, but I didn't think that we gave them a unilateral right to breach the agreement with notice, except under very limited circumstances. But that just may be a drafting problem or something that we need to clarify.
I agree. I think that's a misreading of the proposed procedure. The issue of privilege and confidential legal advice is one that could be easily fixed if they were willing to cooperate with us, and that's the kind of minor, you know, adjustment or tweak that I would hope we would have been getting from the staff at this point, rather than a blanket rejection and a positioning of themselves as the policymakers.
And what about the third point that says that they'd be unable to react without board action?
Well, I think, again, that's a policy issue that it's fully within our remit to make a recommendation on. The point here is that we are trying to recognize the existence of a problem that requires a flexible approach, and what we proposed was a specific procedure that would clarify what everybody's roles and responsibilities are. And it would indeed require some kind of recommendation to the board of directors by the general counsel, which, of course, completely contradicts the idea that the registrar can do something unilaterally. So if the general counsel believes that, you know, all of these exceptions are indeed not acceptable, they can consistently recommend to the board of directors that these registrars be deaccredited. So I think that the procedure is, if there are legitimate concerns on the part of the staff, that the procedure can accommodate them. But on the other hand, it makes it a little more difficult for people to just say, you know, you're out. You know, you can't be a registrar anymore because your local privacy laws don't conform to what we think you should do with WHOIS data.
Okay. Anybody else on number four?
By way of procedure, this is Kathy Kleinman. Just wanted to announce that I just came on.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
This is Steve Metalis. Could I get into the queue?
Sure. Steve?
Yeah, again, I think there are issues raised here that are worth discussing, but then I'm not sure reflect an understanding of what we've recommended. But as you'll recall, we had a lot of debate about how much discretion should be given, you know, how closely to constrain what the general counsel did in his recommendation to the board and what the board did. And, you know, you'll recall we had disagreements within the task force. So there may be ways to draft this that would help to dispel the impression that we're creating some Byzantine process and they won't be able to enforce their contracts without following an onerous process. Again, I think they better understand what we've recommended and we better understand what their concerns are. We may be able to draft this in a way that's more acceptable.
Okay. Any other thoughts on that, number four? Okay, number five is, again, talking about the general counsel. It says it prescribes actions that the GC office may be dealt with. The recommendation posits specific activities for the ICANN GC's office and prescribes actions to the GC's office which may be dealt more appropriately and through other means, basically through policy development, registrar liaison, or global partnerships departments. They think it micromanages ICANN staff too much. I'm a little confused. Personally, I was a little confused by this because the first part they say that the policy process shouldn't dictate how they have to do their business, but on the other, you know, number one says that they shouldn't enter contracts which are illegal. So they're basically saying, you know, part of the message is that they don't necessarily want to change things because of the way the task force and the way this bottoms-up process is working. But on the other hand, in number five, they're saying, well, these issues should go to the bottoms-up process. So it's kind of it's a little irony there, I think. That the one hand, you know, one hand they're saying, you know,
My observation right now is that we have a big gap in understanding or agreement between the ICANN staff and the council and maybe our task forces on what constitutes our role and what constitutes the, you know, and the development of consensus-based policy, and then what constitutes the staff role in implementing with the advice of the relevant SO. And I'd like to kind of just chalk this point up to the need for more dialogue. I think we possibly have a very serious gap, but we don't know that yet. And so I would support the idea we probably ought to invite council to sit in on the call if possible as well. But again, you know, this just seems to, and you know, implementing consensus policy is a different stage than developing consensus policy, and I think we all agree with that.
Well, the other question is, does ICANN have to implement any policy, even if it's a consensus policy?
ICANN does have to implement consensus policy or send it back to us.
I would like to comment on number five.
Sure, Milton.
Again, I just feel like, to me, this is the most disturbing, the overtones of all of the numbers that we've been going through. The disturbing thing is that there's a tendency among policymaking organizations for staffs to become more and more empowered because they have the resources and the, you know, the actual day-to-day control of affairs. I don't understand how you can make a policy effective without, in some sense, translating it into a procedure. So when we say we make a policy that there will be, when we talked about divesting.net or the procedure for doing that, we set a policy, but we had to somehow talk about the procedure, and I don't see how that was micromanagement. I think that when you're talking about how the groups interact, and you don't want to make the process arbitrary, and you don't want to create loopholes, then you have to get down into a discussion of what procedure does the registrar follow, what procedure does the board follow, what procedure does the staff follow. So if you're going to have a policy about how these contradictions between privacy laws and WHOIS requirements get worked out, then of course you have to in some sense specify a procedure. And I just am very puzzled and disturbed by the resistance to that. I know that all staffs want to be autonomous and they don't want people telling them what to do, but if you accept the nature of the GNSO and the nature of ICANN's structure, I think we're fully within our mandate as the GNSO to be suggesting a procedure.
Jeff, this is Steve. Could I get in the queue again?
Sure. Steve?
Again, I think this is an example of where having the dialogue might help explain why we've arrived at the conclusion we've arrived at. First, in the first sentence there where they say it really shouldn't be the general counsel, it should be somebody else, I mean, I think that's an appropriate reaction. I'm not sure why they're saying that, but you know, we put general counsel in there because we thought that was the right person to do these things. If there's a different person, I think I don't have a problem with that that reaction. But again, in terms of this, whether it's specific and micromanagement, you'll recall we started out with a much more general statement. And if you look back at the Task Force 2, it was much more general. But we went through a process in which people said, let's have a more specific procedure. Let's draw it up step by step. And you know, it did get somewhat more complicated and specific. I think if they will look at that record, they may get a sense of why we proceeded that way, and then we can have a dialogue that's kind of based on the merits about whether this is too specific or not. But I think this is just kind of a knee-jerk reaction without something that really needs more dialogue.
Sure. I mean, on their first point where they say general counsel, you could easily substitute ICANN staff will take this action.
Yeah.
You know, and that could be anybody, whether it's the liaisons or their new department called the ICANN Global Partnership Department.
I'm not quite sure what that is, but yeah, I mean, if they want to sign this up to somebody else, I don't have a serious problem.
Okay, I thought I heard someone else. Okay. Anybody else on number 5? Okay, and then number 6, we can discuss. I would have wished that number 6 kind of wasn't in here, because number 6 is kind of that condescending tone, basically saying, you know, don't worry about that concern. Why don't you really just look at the rest of who is and you know, forget about this. I don't think that's what they meant, but in light of our discussion on number 1, it is possible that, you know, if we did decide a major overhaul of who is and lowest common denominator approach, they may be right that this may not be an issue. But, you know, let's discussion on number 6.
Yeah, I would just say, again, it's not like we didn't think of this. Remember the low-hanging fruit argument that complete reform of who is in the mechanisms of tiered access were considered to be something that would take a long time, and in the meantime, we were trying to come up with something that would respond to these contradictions. Maybe we should specify more clearly that this is perceived as a procedure the need for which would go away if we did indeed reform WHOIS policy the way some of us think it should be reformed. But that doesn't mean that we don't need to do this.
Right. Okay. Who else?
Jeff, I'm just kind of remembering, it's Marilyn. I'm just kind of remembering something and from our days of having different staff resources, and that all the task forces really benefited from the opportunity to have a dialogue with Louie or Dan along the way, in sort of, okay, here's what we're thinking, what concerns do the ICANN staff have that they can share with us now? So in the spirit of, we are going to work on this together, it seems to me that's the stage we're at. We need consultation with the ICANN staff. They've given us some questions they have, and we all have questions of our own. Let's just move ahead and schedule something.
But Paul, it seems to me that they're saying, especially because we haven't really tackled tiered access, you know, in our just because of the sequence that we went through of the issues, if that's the last, they're saying that, hey, if I don't know, tiered access that's based on, you know, where you are or whatever, maybe that fixes it, and therefore we don't need this conflict resolution between the local law and the ICANN contract.
Yeah, I think the only way we're going to know for sure of what they meant is probably to ask them when they get on the call. And I know Barbara's on the call. I was under the impression that with Barbara, well, first of all, ICANN staff, in my opinion, can join these calls, you know, whenever they want. I think with Barbara on the call, I thought, Barbara on these calls, I was under the impression, as long as I know some of you others, that ICANN staff was participating through Barbara. I guess you're right, Marilyn. We need to make that more explicit.
Well, could we try to schedule a call with Paul, John, Dan? I mean, obviously, we may not be able to get all of them, but those are the three that Barbara mentioned, I think, that were involved here. And maybe we could see if we could get on the phone with them in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, what I was going to suggest was that, and to try to schedule a time, and in the meantime, because I'm assuming with everybody's schedules and the holidays, that we probably wouldn't be able to get a call until January.
Right.
In the meantime, doing a, you know, kind of just preparing a response to this email, sending it around to the group, having the group comment, try to craft a response, and send it to the ICANN staff so that they can look at it and be prepared to have a discussion on that call in January.
Yeah, I support the idea of scheduling the call. I guess I'm going to question the idea of the task force spending more of its time on drafting a point-by-point rebuttal. I think that is not a good use of our time and actually only creates further alienation and misunderstanding. We've had a call. The staff's obligation and responsibility in policy support is to review the record of the task force. And they had the MP3 recordings in order to do that. They had minutes in order to do that. I think we would only, we would then get into a debate about a document. The task force has work to do. And I don't think that our work in this case is a point-by-point rebuttal. We've discussed it. We need to ask for a meeting and have a dialogue. And I would think the dialogue could follow the point. We should follow a presentation of what the purpose that the task force identified for making, doing the work, how we saw it, the staff raising the questions, and us having a dialogue.
Okay, so the proposal there would be basically to just send a note, invite them to a meeting, ask them to listen, you know, to review the record. It, probably the best thing for them to do would be to listen to this call, the MP3 recording of this call. We'd probably give them a good indication of some of our thoughts. Okay, what do people think about Marilyn's proposal?
I support it.
I do as well. This is Steve. I support that approach.
Okay. Anybody disagree with that?
Well, I would maybe want to supplement it to make sure that in our response, inviting, setting up a meeting, that we also perhaps direct them to the record and perhaps specific elements of the record that, you know, we think are most salient.
Okay. Would we be able to do that relatively quickly? I'm not sure how we would find all of these things in the record.
I actually, Milton, suggest that it is the responsibility of the ICANN staff to familiarize themselves with the work of the policy, and that we should point out to them that the archive materials are there. I know listening to hours and hours of an MP3 recording are very burdensome, but I don't think they have to listen to the entire record, and that we're all very willing, I hear on this call, to talk openly, candidly, and professionally with them. So, you know, if we all agree that Jeff and Jordan could kind of kick the call off with an overview of here's what the task force undertook, here's why they undertook it, let us walk you through the elements, ask questions along the way. Let's see where the gap is.
Well, Marilyn, I wish that your statement could have just been transcribed, because that's the kind of thing I was thinking of, that basically it's the responsibility of the staff to familiarize themselves with the record. Perhaps that statement could be softened a bit, but we would be happy to, you know, engage in dialogue with them about these things, whatever you said. I mean, that's pretty much what we need to convey, I think.
Okay. So I'll get together with George and we'll craft an email invite. So we already have a couple calls scheduled for January. So we're going to have to work with Glenn and figure out the timing of when we can do this one. But the way it's looking, it'll probably be mid to late January, I guess.
Well, Jeff, I think we probably have to call a special meeting for this call, in addition to our regular work session.
Yes, I agree with that. I just know with vacations and other things, it may be difficult to do at the beginning of January, but I agree that this will have to be a special call on the subject. And speaking of that, It was my idea, and Marilyn had kind of concurred on inviting the council to this next to this particular call that we have with the ICANN staff. Does anyone have any issues with that?
I think it's a good thing to do.
Okay. And so we can send an invite to the council. We'll reiterate it's a normal task force call. We're inviting them so that they can listen and participate. But it's basically, it is a task force call.
This be after the holidays?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't think we'll get anybody before then. Okay, so just to summarize, what we're going to do is we're going to send an invite to ICANN staff, specifically Paul, John, Dan, and anybody else in ICANN staff that actually wants to come, Barbara, obviously.
Yeah, I would just recommend Tina and Tim Cole.
Tina, Tim, okay.
Yeah.
So we'll add them to the list. We'll also invite the GNSO Council. The purpose of the call is to discuss the email that was sent by Paul to the task force. I will ask them to, in a polite way, to basically review the record, and that may answer a bunch of the questions that they may have. But we'd certainly be willing on this call to give an overview of how we got to where we are, a status of where we are, and to just have a general discussion on the points raised in their email. Is that about to sum it up for this issue? Okay. Now, Marilyn had pointed out that there is another report that we have not gotten any comment back from ICANN staff. I presume that means, because it's pretty non-controversial from the ICANN staff point of view.
That's my understanding, yes.
Okay, good. And therefore, I would like to proceed, since it looks like this particular issue may take another month or more, this being the conflicts issue, I would like to propose that we issue a call for constituency statements on the first report, ask them to be submitted by January 15th, and then we could use that to compile a preliminary report on that issue. Is there anybody?
I'm not sure. Yeah, the time may be a problem. January the 15th, most of the constituencies wouldn't get it until January the 3rd, 4th, 5th, something like that.
Okay, you want to give till the end of January?
Others should comment, including Thomas. I think so. Wendy and Thomas might have a sense of.
Anybody can have any comments of pushing that to issuing the call for constituency statements and giving till the end of January, I forgot how many days are in January, 30th, 31st?
I'm kind of confused of what the subject of the. Of that call would be both recommendations or just the first one?
It would just be a call for constituency statements on the first topic, the who is notification, conspicuous notice issue.
Okay, good. Could we do it somewhere? I would rather like to see it be pushed back a little bit more, because from how I know, we do have a lot of things going on throughout January. As a registrar speaking, and I doubt that we will get a lot of input from the registrars, at least, and that are one of the persons who are really concerned with the first recommendation we have.
Yeah. Well, I think the issue may be of pushing it off. Remember, all this is constituency statements, so we can do a preliminary report. Then we'll release the preliminary report, and then that whole report will be up for comments by anybody. So there's another opportunity for comments. My fear is that if we push it back any further than January, then we may not be able to get a final decision on it. You know, we have to do a final report after the public comments, and then get it to the council, and then get it to the board. And there's another opportunity for public comment in there as well. that we may not be able to get it to the board by the April meeting in Argentina. And I think that was our goal.
And I think we do have a little bit of a problem at the, you know, council, I think, is we are getting a little nervous at the council level about the fact that our PDPs are just, they seem to be endless, you know, because we're not, we've sort of suspended the PDP timeline. We haven't set that formally. If we could move some of this along, that would really be helpful.
Yeah, but still, you know, if you can't make an informed decision, if you cannot really build a comment through the registrar's constituency, for example, you know, the whole report we write up is probably not worth a lot. So if you don't really include all the comments there might be, so.
But Tom, you know, there's been interim feedback between the two, between you and Paul and your constituency in an interim way, right, along the way. Are you just thinking that the registrars won't be able to do a statement because a month is not long enough?
That's exactly what I'm trying to say. Yeah, it's always we always have a hard time to compile an answer to a question we will ask. And we have some certain mechanisms and bylaws where we have to, you know, have certain timelines to vote on and stuff like that. And without voting on it, you know, we can't even release anything. And that will take more than 1 month, as far as I know.
But, you know, just to reiterate, I think, and I'm pulling up the report now, I think we're talking about three paragraphs here, three statements, right? It's less than a half a page long.
I hear what you're saying, but I have to agree with Tom. We got these procedures that just take time. Can we just say we'll do it as quick as our procedures allow us to?
But we can't, you know, there's one other possibility, isn't there, Jeff? Can't we, could we have constituency statements from those who could make the deadline and then add in the constituency statements for the registrars?
Yeah, I think we can definitely do that. I think it's good probably to set a deadline because people generally, if there's not a deadline, then people kind of just put it off. So I think we can do that, Marilyn. We can say, and hopefully you guys will go back to your constituency and say, hey, look, this is our deadline. You know, if it misses it by a week or so or a little bit more time, then, you know, we'll make do, and we're going to be drafting a preliminary report at that point in time. So I think it would be a good idea to set a deadline and then just see what happens, see what the registrars, what the reaction is.
Paul, can you and Tom come back to us and tell us after you look at your procedures, because we've got several other reports, you know, what you think the reasonable time frame is going to be, because you're going to get several of these coming your way. Right as we work through other stages, other...
Yeah, we most definitely can do that. But it's not only the procedure right now, but it's the time of the year as well. So we have two things we have to be careful of. So I'm very sure we can't start 1 week or before 1 week after January, and then the procedural thing kicks in. So I guess I doubt that we could do it before the mid of February, actually.
So, Jeff, we got comments back from everybody except the registrars. And we were drafting the interim report, and then we would be plugging in the registrar. Let me just think this out loud with you guys. I think what we do is attach the constituency comment, right?
Yeah, we attach it, but the other thing is if we do get anything that are in the constituency statements, actually, no, you know what, you're right. At this point, it's just attaching the constituency statement.
Right, because the drafting of the interim report, you two, Tom and Paul, would be the people who were providing the expertise on where your constituency would be, and then we attach as documentation constituency statements. So we could move ahead and be drafting and then, you know, get your constituency statement, I think.
Is this just one question for clarification? Is an impact statement part of the interim report?
Yes.
Because that might be difficult, because I can only talk about what I see and Paul can only talk about what he sees as a possible impact. And but there are like 280 other registrars out there who might want to take a shot at that. So that might be difficult for us, you know, to kind of get a real good overview about the impact it might have on the registrars without asking them.
Well, right, but remember, after the due date for constituency statements is when we're really going to get the high gear of drafting the impact statements. So you'll at least have, even if you haven't had a formal vote, you'll at least have had some discussion on the issue on your registrar list, so hopefully you'll have some sort of understanding.
Okay.
I think we need to play it, you know, we need to play it out, try creating a deadline, see what happens, and, you know, if we have to extend it, we'll extend it.
Okay.
Okay, so, and we can do that, I mean, Glenn, you still on the call?
Yes.
I mean, the only thing needed to do to issue a first, to issue a call for constituency statements is, again, just posting the link. Is that correct? I mean, isn't that generally what's done?
No, we have to have a document, right?
Yeah, the document's already out. It's already on the GNSS site.
The document's on the GNSS site. It just means that put a link to it and say constituency statements are due by such and such a date.
Right, send it to all the constituencies.
Is that all right?
Yeah, so I think we can do that today. I mean, that's...
Yes.
Okay, so Glenn, that's only with respect to the first document, not the second one.
Right. Yeah, but let's just go back and be respectful here of what we've heard from the registrar. What's the date we're going to say?
So I think the date that we should propose is January, again, I can't remember how many days there are, 30th or
31.
31, there you go. So January 31st, which is a Monday. And then we'll take it from there. So I think that, you know, that's a total of about 40 days from now. Okay. So we'll issue that call. And then I know we're almost out of time. Jordan and I have not had a chance with the tiered access to kind of get together on this issue. We're developing a list of issues going forward. Glenn, when is our next scheduled call? Is it not until January?
The next scheduled call is on... it's on the 5th of January.
Right, and the purpose of that call was to discuss that. Marilyn, have you been able to firm up a date with...
The purpose of that call was not... The CRISP was the following week, the 11th or the 13th.
Right, but I the purpose of that fourth call is to firm up questions.
Right. And Jeff, we need to go ahead and do that. They've acknowledged that they have sent the request off to the third party from Europe, but I told Glenn this morning, sorry, I didn't get a chance to tell you, I'm going to call Andy this afternoon and try to verify if they can't do it the 11th or the 13th, then let's pick a date the following week and go ahead and invite somebody else. And I did send an email suggesting a couple of ideas for other people. We should go ahead and start booking. And I just suggested we might propose inviting .name or .ca, but we have to recognize that .ca is actually, this is not an implemented application in .ca. It would be more, we would be hearing from them about why they're undertaking this approach. Not that it's actually implemented.
Okay, so I think the purpose of the, we should probably do two things with the call on January 4th is number one, even if the call with the CRISP representatives is not going to happen the following week, we can still use the January 4th date to firm up questions to ask
them.
I think the other purpose of that call should be to follow up on our request for a meeting with ICANN on the conflicts issue. And then the third thing is to discuss next steps with respect to the tiered access. And that could include discussing whether, you know, more calls should happen on, you know, with .name and others.
Could we make a decision today about extending invitations to .name and others and go ahead and start that? Because it seems, you know, I would think
it's information gathering. Can't we make that decision today?
You're talking about a separate call with .name and .ca to discuss tiered access?
Yeah.
A separate call from the CRISP call?
Yes. Yeah, because the CRISP call is an hour and a half.
You think that's too much?
No. I just that's what they asked for.
Right. Okay. So I think we should probably decide that on list to see if that's something the group wants to do. I know some people have dropped off. I've gotten some IMs from some people that have dropped off this call. So Marilyn, can you send a request to the full list saying
that?
I think it's a good idea, but why don't we?
Right. Got it.
Okay. All right, I think with that, any last comments?
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Happy holidays. Happy New Year.
Okay,
happy
you too. All right, bye.
Bye.